Hi there, my name is Prakash Chandran, and this is a Pfizer podcast series. And today we're going to be getting to know obesity medicine expert, Dr. Louis Aronne. Dr. Aronne, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time. I always love these conversations to just get to know a little bit about the person behind the MD. So tell us, first of all, how you got into medicine and also the specialty of obesity.
Thanks for having me, Prakash. Really appreciate the opportunity to tell people about our field and the kind of work we're doing. I've been in medicine. I joined the faculty at Cornell in 1986, and when our chairman invited me to join, he said he wanted everybody to start a unique clinical program. Women's Health started that year, 1986. The Comprehensive HIV Treatment Center started, and he asked me what I wanted to do. And because of some research I had done as a fellow at Cornell, I said I'd like to start a weight control center. And I thought he'd say, oh, that's a terrible idea. Just, you know, go back to the role that you have running the teaching program in the Department of Medicine. But he said, no, that's a great idea. And so I started our comprehensive weight control center. And it was tough. Getting people to lose weight back in the 1980s was very difficult. Some people would call it like hand-to-hand combat. And, you know, one of the interesting things that happened was I ran into some people who were doing research at Rockefeller University, which is right next to Cornell. And their work led to the discovery of a new hormone called leptin. And leptin turned out to be really a seminal finding in the field of obesity research because it proved that there was a controlling mechanism for body weight. Your fat cells were trying to tell your brain how much fat was stored. And so with that finding, which actually happened in 1994, what we realized was that obesity is actually a physical, physiological problem. It's an endocrinology problem. It's not a disorder of willpower. And that has completely changed the way we look at obesity. And over time, it's moved more and more into the mainstream of medicine. So it used to be all behavior, and now it's moving more and more into the mainstream of medical treatment.
That is really fascinating that it went from kind of this behavioral choice disease that people kind of had the stigma around to actually understanding that it's more physiological than that. I imagine that before this was discovered, there was a lot of depression around this because people were doing so many things to try to lose weight and not work. Is that more or less correct?
That's exactly right. So for years, people have been trying different diets. I mean, there are all kinds of diets, and nothing has worked satisfactorily. If you look at the evidence on any given dietary intervention, about one-third of people will lose 5% or more of their body weight. And that's enough weight to reduce your risk of healthcare problems. So that's not a bad result. But the question is, what do you do with the other two-thirds of people? You know, do you just tell them, sorry, you're going to develop diabetes? Or, sorry, you have to wait until you gain enough weight to need bariatric surgery, which is really the gold standard of care. So for a long time, it was difficult. There were people like myself who advocated for medical treatment a long time ago. 25 years ago, we started treating people medically and developing new treatment approaches that have now turned into the field of obesity medicine.
So I am curious, like back in 1986, when you were given this option and you chose to focus on people losing weight, what was the motivator or what was the primary driver that made you choose this?
That's a great question. Sometimes I ask myself what it was because it's been very difficult to get to this point, to the point now where people are saying, wow, this is unbelievable. How did you know that this was going to be a real field of medicine? Back then, it was not as apparent. But I had done several studies during my fellowship which showed that an increased body weight was a driver of healthcare costs. And that was a topic I was interested in back then. And so I tried to get my patients to lose weight. You know, said, if this is so bad, let's get people to lose weight. And I bet we could save healthcare dollars by doing that. And it was impossible to get people to lose weight. You know, no matter what you said, no matter what you did, it just didn't work. And I realized that if I were going to be able to make any progress, I would have to understand weight regulation a lot better. And that's what has consumed my entire career, is trying to figure out how this works and how we can treat it.
So before 1994, where this physiological discovery was made, you kind of said it was like hand-to-hand combat and quite a battle. And there's a lot of time between 1986 and 1994. What personally like kept you going and in this field to keep fighting until it was actually recognized as something physical?
Well, it was a lot longer than I'm making it sound like. Because so 1994 was the first evidence that there was a hormone that sent a signal from fat cells to the brain that told the brain how much fat is stored. But it's taken much, much longer to really develop protocols, sort things out, and most importantly, to have people recognize that this is a valid form of treatment and to begin paying for it. I mean, insurance has not paid for most of this until recently. So, you know, I had a number of things that occurred in the process. And one was working with a research group at Rockefeller University, where they believed and were correct that obesity is a physical problem, that it's a problem with the regulation of regulating hormones. Let me say that again. Obesity is a problem in regulating a number of factors that tell your brain how much you've eaten and how much fat is stored. So the key problem is that your brain can't tell how much fat is stored, how much you've eaten, and it sends out signals to make your weight go higher and higher. That's what causes obesity. It's not just that you've eaten too much, it's that eating too much damages weight regulating pathways in your brain, and they get desensitized to these hormonal and neurologically based signals. So totally different than what people have thought. And that's what's changing the way we look at obesity right now. But one of the key conversations I had in that period was with a researcher and the chief of cardiology at Cornell, Weill Cornell, whose name was John Lara. And he had developed treatments for hypertension and really was the father of the medical treatment of high blood pressure. I told him the story of, you know, that there was a hormone that controls body weight, and you know, we're trying to figure out exactly what's going on. We're looking for the gene. This is back in 1989. And he told me that what people were thinking about obesity was what people thought about hypertension in 1958. So this was 40 years later. He said, when I was looking for treatments for hypertension in the 1950s and 60s, everyone said, why do you want to treat high blood pressure? It's a behavioral problem. People get stressed out and their blood pressure goes up. And if you just tell them to relax, their blood pressure goes down. Why would you need medication to treat that? And what he showed in the 1960s was that you could prevent people from having strokes and heart attacks and heart failure if you treated their blood pressure. So huge, enormous health benefit. And now there are 120 or more treatments for high blood pressure in 10 different therapeutic categories. So he encouraged me to pursue this with the idea that I was right, that there was something physical going on. That's why it's so difficult to treat with diet and physical activity, because when you do that, you're not changing the physical aspect of the regulating mechanism.
Wow. It's amazing to have a mentor like that to encourage you, especially with proof with that blood pressure correlation. I am curious, just given the change that you've seen in the past couple decades around this, what is your prediction now for, you know, obesity medicine in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that are happening. Number one is we've had breakthroughs in developing very effective treatments. So the latest treatment for obesity approved by the FDA produces a weight loss of about 15% of body weight, which is really remarkable. That is going to revolutionize the way we approach the treatment of metabolic disease. So if you look at how it's done now, we wait for people, doctors wait for people to develop diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, heart disease, heart failure, sleep apnea, and then they treat those problems. But many of those are driven by an increase in body weight. So they're either worsened by it or they're directly caused by it. I think we're going to see physicians treating weight first rather than waiting till these complications develop. So I think, you know, what I've described in my lectures is that the whole system's going to flip over to where you treat the obesity first, and then if it doesn't work, you treat the complications rather than the other way around, where you just wait till someone develops complications, treat them, and you ignore their weight.
Yeah. So, you know, this is obviously something that you have been passionate about for many, many years. And I always want to spend a little bit of time at the end just getting to know you truly personally. So outside of being an obesity medicine expert, can you tell us a little bit about your personal and family life?
You know, I don't know where you want to begin. I play golf. I'm not that
golf.
Good. That's my hobby.
That's what you've been playing golf for?
About 20 years.
Wow.
I don't seem to get any better. I don't know why.
The
adult pros I play with tell me not to give up my day job. I've taken them seriously.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I think one of the cool things about golf is it's almost like a you versus you sport to play with other people. But
that's
it's
right.
Something that you can constantly improve on over the years of your life. And not only that, you get the opportunity to go to all these amazing places and play all these different courses that you have done over the past two decades.
Yes, I've done those things. It's really a lot of fun to do that.
And what else, like outside of work, do you also do additional research that bolsters everything that you're doing in obesity medicine? Is there anything that you just love to do outside of your day job that helps you become a better doctor?
You know, my day job is kind of my life, my family,
yeah.
And my day job. And doing what I do takes a lot of effort, a lot of time, and I'm really immersed in it. We have a fellowship program, so we train people. You know, I love what I do. I've loved it, you know, throughout my career, and it's very fulfilling. Treating obesity is, I know you want to talk about what I do on the outside, but I have to tell you that it is extremely gratifying to do what we do because our patients come and they've been abused, they've been ignored, no one's paid attention to what they've been saying for their entire lives. And with the kind of treatments we now have, get them to lose weight, they feel differently, they're able to comply with a diet. And they say, this is unreal. I am just so grateful to you for what you've done. You don't need other things.
You know, I think continually coming back to the impact that obesity medicine can have is wonderful. I think that, you know, oftentimes I hear about work-life harmony and just making sure that your values and the impact that you want to have in the world personally also aligns with what you're doing professionally, which it really sounds like for you, it has been the case for many, many years. Well, just as we wrap up, just a couple quick fire things, because I'm going to pry some personal information out of you because people got to know what drives you and what motivates you. So just a couple questions before we close. Tell us a little bit about your favorite type of music. What do you listen to?
Rock, hard rock.
Hard rock.
Led Zeppelin, you know,
like
from back when I was in high school. That's like the same stuff.
Love it. Favorite movie?
I don't watch movies.
So you're just out there playing golf. Let me ask you a question. Favorite course you've ever played?
Augusta.
Where's the Augusta?
It's in Augusta, Georgia. I had the privilege of playing Augusta National Golf Course.
Okay. And why did you like it so much?
Why? You just have to go there to see. It's very hard to get to it.
And final question. You mentioned if you weren't doing this, you're not sure what you'd be doing. If you really had to answer this question, do you think you'd still be in medicine, or is there another field that has attracted you throughout your career?
No, I would be in medicine. There's no question. Like, I'm one of those people who was born to be a doctor. And my mother said that when I was born. My son, the doctor. So that's what happened. I had nothing else I ever wanted to do.
And I have to ask, why would your mom say something like that? Did you have a strong propensity to help people even at a young age?
Well, I think she did to begin with, and that was reflected on me.
Awesome. Well, this has been a fascinating episode. And I know we spent a lot of time talking about your profession, but it's just so clear that you're so passionate about it. You've obviously gone through the ups and downs. And I think that, you know, obesity medicine is really going through another renaissance. I think more and more people are learning about different treatment options. And I loved a lot of the things that you covered in terms of what you're looking forward to over the next 5 to 10 years. So Dr. Aroney, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much, Prakash.
Thank you so much for listening. This has been the Pfizer Podcast Series. My name is Prakash Chandran, and we'll talk next time.